You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
ESO, 7 years of keeping it really geeky.
Hey! What are you trying to do? You ruined my record, man! I just bought it!
Hey, you guys!
How exciting! Spoilers!
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Bye bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye.
The Earth Station One Podcast. It's time to let your inner geek out to play. You can find them at www.earthstationone.com or up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we're done.
Welcome again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I am your host, The Monster, back to give you my review of Thor Ragnarok. Now, I thought, to be fair, I haven't done the review for Thor, nor Thor The Dark World. Although, I may reconsider that last movie, but I want to talk about the Thor movies and my thoughts on Thor, the comics, in general. So, let's start off with the comic side. Since this hero appeared well before I was born, I did get to see the comics, or at least the cartoon version of that, growing up in my early childhood. And I did read Marvel Comics, and Thor was one of many heroes that I followed. But it really never really adhered to me. It wasn't like, oh, I want to grow up to be like Thor. Thor was just too alien for me. I mean, he is, after all, a god. And there's no way to really make him relatable. Other than, if we remember the original origin story, is that he was cast down by Odin, down to Earth. And he is only called upon when Donald Blake taps this cane, I guess, that is really Meow Meow or Mjolnir, and he becomes the mighty Thor. So it's an interesting secret identity, if you want to call it that. And I'm glad when they started to make the Thor movies that that was not really what they were going to go after. The actual true story. So in some cases, us as fans, we can become very nitpicky when it comes to redoing properties that we follow. But considering how Thor is really, again, an outsider character, how can you make this character relatable? It's not like Tony Stark. It's not like Captain America. But yet you have to figure out a way of getting us on board to make him likable. The other thing, too, was that a lot of the text that I read of Thor, it was a little bit beyond me that I could not understand that. So luckily, when we find our first movie, a lot of that text that I struggled with really was not there. And we do get the origin story, sort of, and the Kenneth Branagh version, in which Odin does cast him out to Earth, strips him of his powers, and Mjolnir is basically kind of like the Sword in the Stone in which only the worthy one be able to pull that sword, or in this case, wield the mighty hammer of Mjolnir. Although I do like Meow Meow better. So go back to the origin of that first movie. Kenneth Branagh, who really was fantastic in directing, I think, Henry V and a couple other Shakespearean movies, really brought an energy to this and an epicness and almost Shakespearean tale to life through Thor. And, of course, we get this point of Thor is arrogant. He is but a boy, as Odin called him. And he does have an arc, and he does grow. He is humble. He becomes a servant of the people. And I think that was what made us want to care about Thor. So in the process, we do get Jane Foster. We also have, of course, Darcy, who I love dearly because she refers to Mjolnir as Meow Meow. And I forgot the guy's name. Erik Selvig. So that cast with Thor, and then of course in during the whole plot, you know, Loki is established as being the jealous sibling, which we get the whole backstory that he's really a frost giant child of Lofri. There's a lot of great elements that just work all together. There's humor, there's good action, and it will pace story. I had no problems with this. I remember seeing this actually in 3D, and for the most part, the big element for me that really blew me away was watching the arrival or going into space to see Asgard and how that whole world kind of like flat Earth. Not that there is a flat Earth here, but Asgard is, in essence, a flat Earth. But I love the turning, so you can see that we're coming from the bottom and coming over to the top. And it was just grand and epic. And watching in 3D gave you perfect perspective. And then every once in a while, when they're riding on the Bifrost, that was amazing. That was just an amazing shot that I got to really believe that Asgard was a real place. And what also helped was that as the movie was progressing, he made this reference that to Jane's ancestors who thought about what they did, the gods, was magic, and what Jane does is science. But on his homeworld, it's one and the same. That, to me, helped explain, not so much like aha moment, but it made it logical. You don't have to give the mechanics of whatever that Thor is able to do with Mjolnir, how people are able to cast power like Heimdall into making the Bifrost work. It doesn't matter. It just works. But that's exactly what the movie needed to do. Something as simple as the Force. You don't have to explain what the Force is. It's just a thing. And it makes things happen. And that's all you need to know. It doesn't have to be explained. So again, that's what I loved about Thor in that sense. It doesn't have to go into complications. We don't get the origin story necessarily. We see a little Easter egg of Donald Blake, who was the ex-boyfriend of Jane Foster, from a t-shirt that Thor was wearing. And then, of course, we see Thor being returned back into service after he gave his life to fight against the Destroyer. And of course, there's humor. A lot of good humor that was perfect. It was perfectly balanced. So, by all accounts, you're able to transform a not widely recognized character and made him relatable and very likable. So I was very happy with Thor. Now, having said that, of course, we get him in the Avengers, which is fantastic. And then after that, we get Thor: The Dark World, which is not fantastic. And I've tried to sit through this movie a couple of times and couldn't get through it. I've rewatched it finally several times. Maybe it's just me and I just didn't find anything worthwhile. And then, of course, there are issues right off the bat in which you had originally Patty Jenkins scheduled to do Thor 2. She was fired, or she quit due to creative differences, whatever way you want to consider that. That's a problem. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, because Edgar Wright, who did Ant-Man, left due to creative differences. Other directors have done the exact same thing too. But here, to me, I just did not believe that this movie worked on any level. Much like the problem that Marvel has overall is that you have villains who are one and done. The reason why the Avengers worked, because Loki is the threat who is lingering around, and he's still around. Here, Malekith? I hope I'm pronouncing it. I don't care if I'm mispronouncing Malekith, because it's a stupid-looking elf hobbit creature that Christopher Eccleston played, and it's just a hot mess. I could not care about his motivation and the ether, which is the other Infinity Stone, and then how it all came together. It's just awkward. And the fighting was just unimpressive. Again, I like Thor a lot, but there was just nothing there that I could find. They tried with the humor. Towards the end, Mjolnir is flying through the air, and once again, Darcy sees it flying by and calling it Meow Meow. Again, I give it props for that. But anything after that, there was no chemistry to me with Jane and Thor. Eric became basically slipping off the deep end, and he became a joke, not again being part of the joke, but the actual joke itself. So reducing that character down, there was just nothing there. And I felt really bad that this was a big letdown. And even Iron Man 2, which I thought this was just, there's too much being crammed in there. I've grown to appreciate Iron Man 2 up to a certain point. Whereas Thor, Dark World, there's nothing here. After all this time, I still can't get my head in it to say, oh, at least this part here is my favorite. And that little part is just 2 seconds of saying meow meow. That's it. But again, it's not a great film in my book. So, moving on, because after that we also have Avengers 2, Age of Ultron. He has his own vision due to the Scarlet Witch, in which he's predicting, or is there's the Ragnarok that's coming out. So, saw this with my family. We saw this in 3D, which didn't really, it didn't make me feel any more wowed by the movie. But the one big difference, it's the humor. A complete, almost 180 from what you did in the first movie. And for the most part, I laughed a lot. There were a lot of good moments. But there were a lot of good moments that were also in the trailer that I was really pissed about. The other moment that I was expecting to love was with Hela. So if you remember from the trailer, Thor throws Mjolnir at her. She catches it, holds it, and then smashes it. For some reason, that scene that looked like it was some kind of alleyway was now outdoors. So I don't know how that happened, but whatever the case is. Okay, still impressive. I still went gaga for Hela with the makeup, with the headpiece. But every once in a while, she has to wipe her head or go over her head in order to change the look. It really became annoying because it kept going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Make up your goddamn mind. Pick a look and stick with it. Either look, I didn't care. I like both. So the other thing that I really despise or grew to not like with Hela is that she tried to be quippy and tried to be funny, and it didn't work. Sure, there was a great action sequence, and she may have a kind of a weird walk that reminded me of the Enchantress when in Suicide Squad appeared, and she had that weird-ass walk. And I'm like, see? It looks weird, right? But no one complained about that, but yes, they did on Suicide Squad because it's DC. So, going back to her, she kills off a hell of a lot of people, she sits on a throne, and she's done. Okay, what else is next? It doesn't seem to be anything next for her to do until she's waiting for Thor to show up. Which, in the trailers, again, I hate the goddamn trailers, Thor's there sitting on the throne. And of course his hair is short, because he's got that new hair look. So you know that's the showdown. So even if he had no idea what was going to happen after him saying, I know him from work, that big moment in which Thor and Hulk meet, nothing's going to happen to him. So you gave away the ending, that there was going to be a fight. You knew it was going to come anyway, but I would like to have been surprised. So the two of them are fighting, and then all of a sudden he's starting to channel not so much Mjolnir, because there is no Mjolnir, but channeling lightning. If I want to be a pain about this, technically, I'm nitpicking here, but, you know, he's the god of thunder, not the god of lightning. So why is he doing it both? Or just picking one? He's picking lightning over thunder. He does that, if, you know, he does channel Mjolnir's lightning and cast that. But he became that thing that is able to channel and release all this power. Alright, fine. In the process, he also loses an eye, just like his father, which is fine. I have no problems with that. Asgard is destroyed. I have no problem with that. But again, the big showdown with Hela, her backstory, just kind of falls apart almost immediately because we reveal that she's the long-lost sister that basically Odin never said who she was and just cast her out. So what was her big reel? What was her big deal to come back? Odin's already dead before she even got there. There was no Thor. Loki was not there. So, other than whatever people were there, there was not much for her to do. And I actually got bored with that, unfortunately. So, did I enjoy myself with Thor? A hell of a lot more than Thor the Dark World. So, it was already giving a positive review to begin with. When I look at Superman 3... Superman 3 did a complete departure from what the first two movies did, meaning it was more serious, and yes, there were elements of comedic scenes and characters, but to try to be blatantly funny right off the start became weird. That movie did not work well at all, especially with Richard Pryor, considering that he was, at that time, you know, a big comedic draw, and that movie really failed to capitalize anything that was funny about him. Here, since there are elements in which you can say Chris Hemsworth can bring a lot of humor to Thor, well, you could see that in the very first movie. And even though I disliked the remake of the Ghostbusters movie, he became the secretary to the Ghostbusters, and he was also funny in that. So here, basically, he was allowed to improvise a lot more, and it was at times really funny and genuine. So I'm not sure how I feel after watching the first two movies, if this was the right direction, but it's an interesting take to make someone have fun, a lot of fun on an adventure that I was not expecting. So is he going to be like the snarky Tony Stark that's funny? Or he's going to be self-effacing? I don't know. I'm interested to see where they're going to go with this character coming into the future. Now, kind of jumping ahead into the post-credit scenes, which I thought there were three. Unfortunately, there was only two. And starting with the first one, we do see the fact that Asgard is, of course, no longer, and the ship that's transporting the Asgardians are flying through space, and then, of course, Thor and Loki are having a moment, and then you see this much, much larger ship looming, dwarfing that ship, and then it cuts to black into the credits again. So from that moment, I wasn't like, ooh and ah, I was just like, what the hell? So, of course, later on, it's revealed that that was Thanos' ship. And considering moments before that, during a movie, Loki does have that moment in which he has to get the... picks up the Infinity Stone, because he just can't stop playing with the Infinity Stones. You know Thanos is going to be after them. So that's the first of many stops in which Thanos is going to be collecting his jewelry for his glove. In the last post-credit scene, we get the Grandmaster, played by Jeff Goldblum. Normally, I would be Jeff Goldblum. I'm all in. He is fantastic. He is funny as hell. And for the life of me, I just did not find much humor in what he did in his Jeff Goldblumness. That is a word. So I was really let down by that. So the whole thing at the very end about how, let's call it a tie with the revolution, fell flat for me. So didn't care about that. Didn't care much about Hela. What saved this, basically, is Chris Hemsworth and him being Thor. So I'm happy that it happened. I'm glad to have seen it. Is it one of the best movies for this year? I don't know. I still have a couple more movies still to go. But again, a big improvement over Thor: The Dark World. So I'm happy at least for that. So, and of course, we're going to be leading into the Avengers and the Infinity War. So, again, who is not excited about that? On this note, I'm going to close out the podcast. Remember, you can always email me at monstersci-fi show@gmail.com. You can find me on the various social networks. So, again, thank you for listening to me and to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. It's sci-fi from a certain point of view. Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.